We have for you Bicycle Mark. If you want to embarrass him, ask him what he's doing last month or about his boat. We're talking about journalism and how journalists got spied on, arrested, and what was it, teleported in 2009. Thank you.
Hello, can you hear me in the booth? You get no kiss from me, Finn. But yeah, Finn was asking me about my boat problems. I don't have any boat problems. Good evening, everyone. I've never had an 11 o'clock slot before, and so this is what it's like. Yeah. I'd like to say hello to everyone here in the room. I guess I did that. And everyone at home on your computer, hiding in your secret bunkers, I'm very glad you could join us. And those of you in Siberia also, my new friends. My name is often called, or the name they use for me is Bicycle Mark. You could also know me as Mark. That's my human name. For those of you who don't know me, I'll briefly, if it's even possible for me to be brief, I'll describe who I am. I'm a guy. I'm a guy who gets applause for things he doesn't deserve applause for. Hey. No. I was trying to explain to someone, you know, what 23, well, in this case, 26 C3, I remember my 23, what these crowds are like, and I was like, well, there's certain things they'll absolutely clap for, like if your Mac has a problem. I am an American, and you can hear that. It's very hard. No, don't. No more. There'll be an applause sign, and no, stop. And I'm also a Portuguese person. You may be able to tell by my facial features. Or you see the Judaism perhaps somewhere, the Moroccanism also in there. It's all part of being Portuguese, so it's good. And I'm a journalist. I am a journalist because I call myself a journalist. That may not be enough for you, and you can just take me off your list of journalists then. But I practice what I call some form of journalism, and I'll admit to you, it's not just to you and you. It's not always the most investigative as it should be. Sometimes I wish I did a better job. But I do some kind of a job, so I call myself a journalist. And that's important because today I'm telling tall tales. And when you write the title, Exciting Tales of Journalists, I come from New Jersey where everybody's really, sarcastic. So if it says Exciting Tales, you can be sure you're going to fall asleep by the end of this one. No, it's going to be exciting. There's going to be danger. Finn will jump through a hoop, a flaming hoop. Just in case we need. No. All right. So is that enough? I'm a what do we call an independent, a blogger if you want, a podcaster if you prefer, a citizen journalist. They have all these names now. I can't even keep track of what I am. People just tell me what I am, and I go, yes, that's what I am. So, and I bring to you today tales of a journalist spied on, arrested, and deported for one reason, or perhaps more than one reason. I always say one reason, and then I decide, no, there's more. The main reason is I have a lot of friends in journalism. Some of them I kind of grew up with in university, and later on we got, well, some of us got jobs, some of us didn't. Some of us speak in different places about something they are not always doing. So a few of my friends are in journalism now, and through the magic of the internets, which you all know quite well, this place, I've met other journalists, and sometimes we even meet in real life, and we actually talk. Or other times we just sit at a table and we work on our devices, and we occasionally nod at each other, ha ha, show a video, keep typing. You know, you all socialize the same way. Well, journalists are starting to catch up to you, but they're not quite there. And one thing I noticed in 2009, as I talked to my journalist friends, interviewed them for my podcast, shameless self-promotion, is that they're out there doing investigative work, important work, about governments, about companies, about people who are being oppressed, beaten down, and they're good journalists. But what I noticed was they don't know much when it comes to basics, you would call it basics, of simple security, or simple, never mind the word security, keeping your ass covered. Yes, keeping your ass covered. That's what I'm going to call it from now on. I didn't write that in a slide. And so I've noticed my friends are getting into problems. And even some people I don't know are getting into problems, be they arrested, deported, and all these other words that I tried to use. So we'll try to move forward if the computer would allow. That's who am I. That's me like 20 years ago. So did I want to say anything else before we move forward? No? Everybody seated and comfortable? Is this... Yeah. Oh, and one of my goals towards the end of this talk, besides telling a few stories and maybe making a few jokes, is I would like to sort of course, make a conclusion that makes you go, ah. So let's see if we can get to the ah, or the hope, you know, the up thing. Because I start here, and then I go here, that's where you fall asleep, and then you come back, you wake up, and you have inspiration because you were dreaming momentarily during my talk. So... you know, what is a journalist? I kind of went over. I mean, I decided what I do is my brand of journalism. It may not be the perfect brand of journalism. Thankfully, there's lots of brands of journalism out there. So for today's talk, for my talk, and I understand if you don't agree with it, control yourself if you don't, because we have security. A journalist is someone who, well, does the work of reporting. Or I can even tolerate a little news analysis, opinion pieces here and there, but really the reporting is what I'm focusing on. And that doesn't necessarily mean, as you know, that you work for a big newspaper or a big media company. It's not that there's that many left anyway. But you could be an independent person, of course. And I'm going to include, if you'll allow me, I'm going to include bloggers. No, okay. I'm really glad, because it's possible, right? A blogger doesn't have to be a journalist. A blogger could be your younger sister who went to a movie yesterday and is complaining about the sticky floors. That's why nobody goes to the movies anymore. The stuffy floor is sticky. It is. I haven't gone to the movies in 3 years, but I remember when it was. Well, there's a clock there. Let's not get distracted. Nope. And I'm glad because years ago when I said a blogger could be a journalist, people would throw things and then security would get involved. But a blogger could be a journalist, okay? Let's just agree with me, even if you disagree with me, moving forward. I'm going to include them. All right, so let's move. Now that we've established who a journalist is, or for my talk, who a journalist is, you can kind of tell when this thing's freezing up, can't you? All right, good, good. This clock is in a bad place. I can't see anything. I want to talk about the different types of journalists real quick. The biggest group that I want to talk about, and myself, I'm in this group, freelancers. Even if you write for a big newspaper these days, more and more, you're not staff, you're a freelancer. And that means, of course, what it sounds like. You're responsible for your own, in many ways, your own destiny and what you want to do. And yeah, you'll get paid once you've produced the work, whatever it may be. And more, be they at big newspapers or idiots like me who run around the world, we're freelancers. And so up until the day we submit, we're on our own. And that's important. I said that twice already because it's important. That is one of the largest groups, and especially one of the largest groups that's being under pressure, that's being arrested, that's having trouble all over the world. And as that group grows, so too do the problems, it seems. I've got that group out of the way. I want to go to bloggers. Can we go to bloggers? We can. There's an old friend, Mr. Wolf. That's old, though. That's not from 2009. But he was a blogger, and he served some time because he wouldn't give up some video. So I'm including bloggers, I'm including podcasters, and that includes the ones who stay right where they are in their community. They're reporting about their local government, their local, be it a protest, whatever it may be. In those instances, bloggers are journalists. And as people writing about something going on, they run the risk of being picked up, of being spied on, of pissing off a government or a company or whatever it may be. So bloggers are another group. Here's a group you're not going to like. Activist journalists. You may have never heard of this or disagree that the two should ever go together. But where I was raised, in the suburbs of New York, we had activist journalists. Actually, you know what? I wasn't alive in the 60s, but I like to pretend I was. And We had activist journalists writing for wonderful alternative newspapers, and they were activists because, besides doing the reporting, they were running around with the signs, behind the signs, they were getting tear gas, and they were writing about, you know, fuck the police, and then they would write about it, and they would say in the beginning, yes, well, fuck the police, but here's what happened. And that's a bit of an activist journalist, a journalist who doesn't hide, and I want to be one of these, so I'm going to say I'm an activist journalist. I don't hide my point of view. It'll be there, out in the open, but then there will be content. There will be facts, I hope, if I did a good job that day. And so activist journalists are also, of course, one of the groups that's at highest risk because they're there in the crowd, they put themselves on the line, and when it comes down to it, not only can they be on their own, of course, like a freelancer, but they might not get the support of even a public that says, well, you're in a protest, so you take that beating or you get arrested. So they're part of that group, all right? A quick thing on where. I don't know why, I guess the journalist in me wants the who and the wheres and all these other boring things. That's Iran. I've never been there. I act like I recognize it. Oh, that's Iran. There's me in the middle. No, I don't get out much. A few people, no, I get out. So, you know, where in the world? If we look at Reporters Without Borders, I always get that name wrong, Reporters Without Borders, the English translation. They always release every year. You've probably read it. I have a good time the night it comes out, and I study it, sort of. And they have their list of the Press Freedom Index. And I go right to the bottom. I don't know about you, but I don't feel like cheering, although they're great. I don't go like, yay, Sweden! I head right to the bottom and I'm like, ha ha, oh, Cuba again? You know, yes, Sweden, always up there, Finland. That's beautiful, the people in the top, but if you look towards the bottom, the nations that we see this year and that we've seen in past years, let me make sure I get them, Eritrea, Cuba, Burma. Imagine that, Burma. Unbelievable. I know you're shocked by this list. Let me add North Korea to it. And they always come at the bottom. And I point this out because these are, of course, the obvious places where bloggers, journalists, they're all lumped in, including the policy of the government. The border guards are part of this. But it is, of course, possible that bloggers or freelance journalists could be spied on right here in good old Europe, right? You probably are thinking of someone you know who's a journalist who got spied on. Why didn't you tell me? I'm not going to tell that story. But even in places like the United States, it is possible. We know that the U.S. government spies. Even under the Obama administration, by the way, there is still spying. Can I just jump into my own presentation and interrupt? I was in the U.S. last week. I'm interrupting Mark. Kanye interrupted. I was going to put Kanye interrupting for fun. I didn't. I was in the U.S., and a lot of people wanted me to tell you about this new product. No. They wanted me to tell you that even though Obama's the president and we dug Obama when we voted for him, things are not what they're supposed to be. And we don't love everything that's going on, including you still get spied on, that darn Guantanamo is still open, and that we can't seem to get a real healthcare thing. So if anyone asks, not everything is okay in America, you know. That was a little interruption. Now back to our regular program. He got punched. Wasn't that funny? No, it's not. It's not funny. That was a test to see who has any morality. What is wrong with you, P? The Duomo? A statue of the Duomo? It's not okay. Shh. I don't support the... Oh, never mind. It's really weird. But, you know, so in case you didn't know, and I know you know, who's doing the spying? Now, of course, governments can do spying. We know they're good at that, and they have the resources. But it's not only governments. In some countries, we have paramilitaries. Yes, there are paramilitaries. It's like a group of parrots, and they... No? No, but paramilitaries, they also do spying, and they also have access to resources. In some cases, they have friends in government. And of course, corporations do spying, and that's some of the least reported. Corporate spying, it's big. So these are the types of groups we're going to see doing spying. And yeah. So let's maybe move to some examples, why not? Move on with it. This is Amy Goodman. Maybe some of you have heard of her. She runs this small news program called Democracy Now!, one of the finest in the world. Yes, now that deserves employment. I don't know if I spell things right. Don't look. I think I did. So Amy Goodman, she's a rebellious one. She reports on things you're not supposed to, and she's very good at it. And so the other day, she's going to Canada, because Canada has healthcare. And no, she was feeling fine. No, she went to report about it. She wanted to go because there's this guy, Tommy Douglas. Sounds like the guy next door. Tommy Douglas is he alive? Well, when he was in charge of Saskatchewan, which is a place, seriously, he installed this whole universal healthcare system. He started it, or at least he fueled it. Never mind, Canadians want to correct me. Just go with it. He's the guy, came up with the health system, so Amy Goodman wants to go up there and interview about Tommy Douglas because Americans don't understand Canada, healthcare. The environment. And so she goes to the Canadian border. Show of hands, have you been to the Canadian border with the United States? Wasn't that interesting? Was it tough? Like, ask you questions. Tell us who you are. No, they do now. Amy Goodman goes up to the border. I wasn't there. I love acting like I was there. I heard her testimony. And she thinks she's going into Canada, which, you know, some of you have been there. And the Border Patrol guy says, what are you coming to report about? Immediately, I have some questions for him. And she says, oh, I'm coming to talk about Tommy Douglas, healthcare. In case you didn't notice, it's big in the U.S. now, this issue. I might also talk about the wars. I'm going to talk about the financial crisis. And then the guy goes, are you going to talk about the Olympics? And Amy Goodman goes, you mean the thing where Barack Obama went to Copenhagen and tried to get the Summer Olympics and failed? And the border guard says something like, yeah, and he failed. And she's like, yeah. And she goes, no, I hadn't really planned on it. And he goes, what about our Olympics? Apparently Canada has the Winter Olympics. Apparently there are still Winter Olympics. All the skaters and stuff are very disappointed in me. And so the guy, among the things he does, he makes her wait in that imaginary space that we've seen. It's not imaginary, it's just scary. And takes her computer and starts looking through the computer. Amy, of course, very worried about this. And they hold her for a little while, ask her questions. They want to see her notes. And the dialogue is bizarre. According to the Amy Goodman in the transcript, she said, well, I have a book, you can read through it. First of all, I'm surprised she's telling him so much, right? You know, I'd be like, you want to know what I'm reporting about? You can read about it tomorrow in the paper. And what's your name? The brave boy who never crosses the Canadian border. I know, she's much braver than I am, it's true. She says, there's my book. And he goes, no, I want the notes. And I really don't understand if he meant the notes to the book or the notes in her computer. Whatever the case, she got held for a while, and then she was told she had 2 days to exit Canada while she's entering. 2 days. And she said they called it a special circumstance because of the Olympics. They have extra power. Moral of the story, even at the Canadian border, journalists are not only being, you know, stopped and questioned, but their stuff is being gone through. So be careful on your way to Canada. That's the Amy Goodman story. Love how I breeze through very serious things. Oh, I brought a news item in case my story isn't as good as theirs. Talk, news guy. He's talking. Hi. You know, I told it better than he did, but can we get this working for my future?
Our Go Public reporter
might want to have kids one day.
And has the exclusive top story.
An award-winning U.S. journalist. Amy Goodman is well known in alternative media circles.
Is the host of Democracy Now!
I didn't know we needed to have even a visa coming into Canada.
Here to promote a book.
Clearly, he wasn't going to let us go.
She wasn't sure she'd get in.
They took the passports and then said, pull over.
You were flagged right off the bat?
Yeah.
Goodman was grilled at the Peace Arch border Wednesday.
The Peace Arch?
Repeatedly, what she'd be talking about.
I said, because we have a big health care reform debate going on in the United States. We were looking at Tommy Douglas, but he still wanted to know what else I would be talking about. And I said, and I'll be talking about the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq.
She says they were only interested in what she'd say about the Olympics.
He made it clear by saying, what about the Olympics? And I said, you mean when President Obama went to Copenhagen to push for the Olympics in Chicago?
Yeah, it becomes the same
he
thing
said,
I said,
no, I'm talking about the Olympics here. In 2010. I said, oh, I hadn't thought of that. And he was clearly incredulous that I was not going to be talking about the Olympics. He didn't believe me.
She's been detained before, yes. But let's go to a very good friend of mine. That's the Amy Goodman story. Here comes a fun one. Have you ever been to Fiji? Raise your hand if you've been to Fiji. It's a country. You've been to Fiji. Was it nice? Yeah? You have a lot of military? Mm-hmm. Okay. Fiji has a military junta, in case, you know, that wasn't probably when you were there. My friend Anna knew about this, but she was doing an expose on Fiji water. Anybody holding Fiji water right now? Yeah, don't admit it. I don't even want to see it. No. Fiji water is, you know, look, they can explain themselves. I won't even bother. My version is they're a water company based in Fiji that's very popular in the United States. And because they're real trendy, you see, like, what's the skinny one that always looks like she's going to die into the porno tape? That one with the hotels. She, you know, has been photographed with Fiji water. And our dashing president, here and there in the Oval Office, this is real. They've taken his picture, and Fiji is on the table at the Oval Office. And actually, the Ministry of Tourism of Fiji uses this photo of Obama next to a Fiji water bottle as promo material. My friend Anna worked with me in New York, and she's a great journalist. Much like me, she takes a while to do a good project, I think. And so she's doing this expose on Fiji, collecting information about how, like, they, you know, they have a little plant. That's not, the gun is photoshopped. The hat is real, though. Comes with every bottle. And so, you know, they have this plant, and the other ones have a waterfall, and when you drink it, you feel like, oh, you're back in the Garden of Eden. And that's their whole thing. It's natural. They swear that they're, what is it? Carbon neutral in their delivery of water, no matter where in the world it goes, because they load it on boats that are already carrying other things. Look. You know, this is a very subjective talk, obviously, but, you know, you can look it up. Anyway, so Anna does her investigation properly, not like me up here, half-assed McGee over here. No, she really goes and does her research. So she goes to Fiji, and my friend Anna, much like I explained about some journalists, she's great with the investigation, doesn't know much about how the computer works. And so, you know, she likes the email. I hope she never sees this. I didn't tell her I was doing this. I'm going to get in trouble. You know, she does her email. She's in contact with her editors back in the U.S., and she's just there to, you know, go to the factory, some very basic stuff, I say. You know, the street that has the actual Fiji water, one of the foundation, is also the street where there's an internet cafe. And so she goes to that internet cafe because for some reason she couldn't get internet in her hotel. Look at me, spoiled first world boy. No internet in the hotel? So she goes to an internet cafe. And that is where, for the course of about a few days, a week maybe, she's typing her emails and she's sending her whatever she's working on back home to the editor. She has her computer as well at the hotel. And after a few days of this, I might let her tell this story. Well, anyway, one day she walks into the internet cafe and the little person at the main desk there, you know, the one always playing the games or watching the porn, it says, we're going to close early today on like a regular day. And Anna's like, oh, okay, closing early, I guess it's Fiji, whatever. She sits there and she does whatever she does with communication, computers. This is me on a computer. And all of a sudden, police walk in and they go to like the only other person in the internet cafe, talk to her for a bit, she leaves, and they go up to her and they go, we know about you. What water company do you work for? apparently they don't read very closely when they're spying. And she said, I don't work for any water company. And he said, we know what you're trying to do. You're trying to slander the company of Fiji, and you're not going to get away with it. You know, we take Fiji very seriously here in this country. Fiji is important, and you can't just write whatever you want and make, you know, criticize the company and so on. So my friend Anna, she gets interrogated there for quite a while. They, among the things they threatened her with, now remember, this is military junta now, so maybe they're a little crueler than they were when the dude on the phone was there. I'm just kidding. So they go, tell us everything, tell us the truth about what you're going to write, or we'll put you in a men's prison. And they gave one of these lines. I wish I could have been, well, They say, and you know what happens to women in men's prisons. Anna said to me that there had, when the military junta took over, they had put women in men's prisons and they were raped and you know, beaten. So Anna knew, you know, what these guys were threatening without saying it. And it was this, you know, moment of, oh shit, they've been reading my emails. It turns out that the woman behind the desk with the porn and the, she's a cop. And Anna doesn't know, and she'll tell the story here. Anna will tell the story. Oh yeah, I did this because I was trying to get creative. She's going to tell a story. Nope, she's not.
Yeah, is it?
Oh, there she was.
Yeah, it was the day after my trip to the factory, so I sent a few emails back to the States, you know, saying that I'd been to the factory. I don't obviously recall, you know, what all the emails I sent were, but obviously about that. And then I do remember specifically I picked up a story off, you know, when I'm like Google News and picked up a Wire story just to see, you know, what the main stories coming up about Fiji were. And one of the first ones was a Wire story about these Australian and perhaps New Zealand journalists who had been deported, but they were reporting on the political situation. They had filed stories, you know, the government knew where they were. These were very political stories about the direct situation. Anyway, so then at that point, pretty much right after that, my internet connection just stopped working. It just died. And then I asked the staff, you know, I said, is it broken? What's going on? Is it the problem? And then they went back and like talked to somebody and came back and said, oh, you know, it'll just be a few minutes. If you just wait, it'll fix, come up again. So I waited and it was just a few minutes. And then, as I write about in the intro to the story, then a pair of police officers came in, and I saw them go and talk to another woman, first. I wasn't really, you know, I couldn't quite hear what they're saying, but they went and spoke to her, and then they just, you know, came straight at me and were like, you know, we're going to take you in for questioning about the emails you've been writing, which was just a complete shock. You know, I had to even realize that it just, you know, I never would have occurred to me that they had somebody in there. And I would later, you know, he would tell me that this woman was a police officer. So, you know, they basically had, you know, I don't know how that technically works. You probably know better than me, but they, you know, they had some way to reroute everything people are writing, I guess, in this cafe through to this woman's computer where she can read it and you know, call the cops in.
So again, you heard that whole, I have no idea how exactly it works. I'm not saying I do, because one thing I want to confess right away is I'm not as technically as inclined as most of you are. I'm sort of trying to be an in-between between the journalist and you know, the wonderful hacking community. But there you heard it in her words. I don't really know how that works. Apparently, that woman at that one computer, it goes through her computer. They can see my emails like a pipe or tubes. A quantum leap through the pipes into the... A quantum leap is not that far, it turns out. And so I did what I said I would do. So this is my friend Anna's story. She did get out. The American consulate, credit to them, got her out. And she immediately left the country, and she has no plans of going back to Fiji. And the article is out. It's in Mother Jones, and it's worth reading before you take another sip of that Fiji water. So that's corporate spying. Beaten and arrested, yeah. I knew I would make a slide with that title one day. It's important to note, and I, you know, I set off, here's another confession. When I do these talks, I don't drink, but I want to find something to bring to you, and I don't always find it. And one of the things I noticed in doing all this research, even before I knew I was going to do this talk, is that despite all we know about security, internet security, communication, so on, the most common way that a journalist is detained is still the old-fashioned way, which I can't tell you how to stop, which is the guy outside in a car in a trench coat waiting for you, following you in his car, or the people who come up to you and beat the crap out of you and accuse you of things. Now, that part I cannot defend against, but this also happens, or maybe it happens, it starts with the data and it goes to the beating, or it starts with the beating and it goes to the data. I just wanted to give credit to beating and arrested is still the most common method used in the world, according to my research. And so I wanted to mention just one pair of citizen journalists. These are, they have a lot of names. Again, like people give me names, video bloggers. They've been called youth activists in Azerbaijan. Amin and Adnan. I've spoken to a very good friend of theirs. I can't speak to them. They're in jail. They're in jail in Azerbaijan. They've done video as video bloggers. They're very into youth organizing. They make websites, a couple of different themed ones about debate and things that the Azerbaijani government doesn't like, you know, debate. They also don't like democracy. That's one of the other things they don't dig. And one day they're in a restaurant eating, and some guys walk in. This is such an easy story to tell. Walk in and start messing with them, insulting them, and eventually it comes to physical. And they get hit. There's a fight. The cops pick them all up, put them in jail, let the guys who walked in and beat them up go soon after, not immediately, but soon after, and hold these two video bloggers and ask them questions about their activities, ask them tons of questions about their work online. What is this online organizing? And they're held in jail since July. On no charge. There was eventually a charge. It came out in like October, and it's the charge of hooliganism. They're hooligans, which apparently you can be held for I don't know how long. And the trial is still in process. It takes quite a long time in Azerbaijan. But again, here we have video bloggers, might not call themselves journalists all the time, but in the eyes of the government, they're some kind of a threat, and they're worth watching. And when you get a chance, they're worth picking up on the charge of whatever. Hooliganism. So that one is still pending, and they're still in jail, unfortunately. Interesting thing, they did give one a chance to leave. I think Amin was given a choice to leave. And he refused. He said, if you don't let my friend go, my partner, whatever you want to call him, I'm not going anywhere, which I thought was interesting. The old divide and conquer thing didn't really work. I don't know, just thought I would say that. I don't know, I had a picture of a guy with a megaphone, so I put that in. Data confiscated. Another one that's really hard to find examples of. People get their data confiscated and then given back, and they're not sure, you know, how far the government got or the authorities got. Colombia is an interesting case, and I could have chosen plenty. I chose Claudia out of everybody. I don't know Claudia. She doesn't know me. She'd be surprised that I was doing this. Yeah, she would. Claudia is a journalist for a radio station, an online radio station in Colombia. Interesting country, right, for a press. And because she's doing reporting on human rights, the government puts her under this program, the Protection of Journalists Program, or the Journalist Safety Program. Note to self, if you ever get asked to be in a journalist safety program, say no. Yeah, because it means the opposite. It's like my exciting tales. I don't even know if she had a choice. She gets put in the journalist safety program by the Colombian Ministry of, you want the official name? Ministry of Assholes. It has an A in it, but I couldn't look. There's a clock in the way. It means that you get bodyguards because you're in Colombia, and you get monitored for your own safety. And so it turns out, over the course, this started in 2004, it's still going now, somebody in the, what was it? What did I call it? The Journalist Safety Committee, whatever it's called, leaked emails, information as to where she travels. Well, that one is easy to leak. And then while she was away, they accidentally broke into her house and took some documents. And she discovered this when she came home and it was broken into. And she's trying to take them to court, but it's a little hard to take the government to court when something they're not supposed to do because they're supposed to be protect. So to this day, Claudia remains under the protection of this, I'm going to call it insane if I could go out on a limb, insane committee to protect journalists under the Colombian government, and the Colombian government claims that it's not their fault, they were infiltrated by paramilitaries, which as we all know, are a bunch of parrots that go into your house and take everything. No, they're not. That joke didn't work the first time. You guys are going to love this one. Look, you know what that is? It's abstract art. Now, I threw this one in. Did I misspell it? Probably. I threw this one in because Lily Sussman, you ready for this? You've all talked about this here and there. Lily Sussman's a student, and she found herself working in Egypt, part of a university work program with refugees. Actually quite noble, as I went reading. I thought, oh, this girl's more than just a college party person. She's a noble, pretty noble person. Huh? My opinion. And she's in Egypt for like 6 months. I was reading all her posts about it, right down to which farm animals she was disappointed were getting executed on this special holiday where animals are executed. So, you know, you might say, not much of a journalist. And journalists might say, that's not much of a journalist. Lily herself probably doesn't think she's a journalist, but she did report about issues. Cultural, tourism, she wrote for Boston.com for briefly, a couple of posts. And she's crossing Egypt into Israel. Immediately you can see where this is going. And a cow stepped on her computer. Now, I had to do something. Because the going in a straight line doesn't work for me. So she goes, and you've heard this story. I'll let her tell it, I think. Lily, tell it, please. She will tell it. And begin. Other words.
Well, you go through the Egyptian side, and it's really simple, and everyone's really good-natured, and they're like, oh, you speak Arabic, ha ha. And then you get to the Israeli side, and they're like, hi, like, who are you? From the beginning, they were kind of cold to me. They asked me if I was Jewish, and I'm like, yeah, my family is partly Jewish. So they started quizzing me on the Jewish holidays, which I know nothing about. And I found it kind of funny, and I was smirking, and the girl was obviously kind of offended. And she also asked me why I would live in Egypt and not Israel. They put my things through their scanners. They said, okay, it's just going to be a little bit longer. You can go wait outside. There's this beautiful deck overlooking the Red Sea. So I'm out there, and like, I know they have my computer, but I have no idea what they're doing with it or why. So I hear an announcement that it was basically just like passenger on suspicious belongings. There's going to be gunshots. Don't be alarmed. So, you know, I hear a couple gunshots. And this guy comes out and introduces himself as the manager. And he's basically just like, sorry, but we had to blow up your laptop. I asked why, and he just said it was suspicious and we have security concerns and it's how we do things. He didn't give me any specific answer why. Oh, I was furious. I was yelling, cursing, crying. They said he'd used the word blown up, so when I see my laptop and it has three bullet holes in it and it's not, it's still this like cohesive computer, I was actually like, oh, like maybe something's okay. And it turned out my hard drive hadn't been hit, so it was actually happy. The whole thing was not.
What have I got, five? Okay, I skipped the Twitter thing. Forget Twitter. But hello to Twitter. By the way, they offer her a full refund for the computer. I'm guessing the original value, or hopefully enough to buy one. But she has to fill out the paperwork in time, which apparently is, you know, so she may not get a new computer. Again, here we have a case of somebody who wouldn't even be considered a journalist by most, although we're evolving in who's a journalist and how we understand where journalism can come from. But here we have someone that nobody would consider needing protection. But the Committee to Protect Bloggers decided, yes, she is. And I agree. She was doing reporting. Could have happened to anyone, but it happened to someone who happens to publish things online. And by the way, they looked through her notes, and they read through her diary, I guess a paper diary, and they found entries about Palestine. She took a photo of, it said on a wall, it said, fuck, and then it had the Star of David, a graffiti. And the guard goes, why'd you take a picture of this? Or maybe the face wasn't like that, it's my version. Why did you take a picture of this? And she said, because I thought it was shocking. And you know, and she gave her a look like, you know, disappointed. So I'm just bringing these things up because maybe this is why she was considered a security risk, or otherwise I can't figure it out. But again, these are things that happen, especially at border crossings. The moral of my talk today is don't travel. Leave it to me. You know, I put in a bunch of slides because I'm like a drunken sailor when I do this. And, you know, causes I think we've pretty much gotten into. The main cause is that here we have a group of people, which I believe, perhaps wrong, have a great amount of knowledge about security, far beyond, what I know, definitely what journalists know. But we like journalists, for the most part, depending on the journalist. We want good journalism, I think. And if you want good journalism, one of the things we're going to need is, especially in a world where journalists are on their own, you know, who knows what's going to happen to newspapers? Clearly, they're not going to be as big with the money and hiring full-time staff and providing resources. So we have journalists on their own, and they could learn some stuff if they'd show up here or do some more reading about that issue, but they're busy with their topic, with their Fiji water, with their Colombian Civil War. And here we have a group of people who know a lot about security, perhaps, or basics of computing in a more secure way. And what's missing is a bit of communication between the two. What I'm telling you is go out and make a friend who's a journalist. Perhaps. What I want is more communication between hackers and journalists. Is that too much to ask? I don't know. I looked through some sites like Reporters Without Borders and the EFF has a good one. I even took a picture of it. Where usually when you look for how to help journalists in a bad situation, it's all about how to get a lawyer, how to call the embassy, if you need to be exiled from your country, how to get exiled. These are all important things, and they've been important things for years, but there's not much in terms of a section on what to do, how to blog, you know, in a more secure manner. Someone who did do it, here we go, skipping to the end in lightning fashion, was Global Voices Online. I have a little picture, too, for that. Yeah. I'm writing about things I don't understand. Look, there's the EFF's page. Here's a bunch of monks with cameras. And I write this slide as if I have some surprise coming next. I didn't write any steps for journalists. I'm not going to sit here and write how they can most securely compute when I'm not the one most qualified to write it. What I'd kind of like, maybe I should just run around and interview you all. How long could that take? I would like to make my own list, and I would also like to publicize or point to and recommend those that already exist. So what I'll do lastly, besides calling for more communication between journalists and hackers, and that includes a good, solid, up-to-date list of how to protect yourself as an independent reporter, I'll just mention these three guides, and they were also my sources for a lot of this. These are three, right? Global Voices Online has a great project. EFF does a really good job. That's a lot of reading to be done there. And the Committee to Protect Journalists reports on which bloggers or which freelancers are being oppressed. So let's go to that high note. Go to the high note. The high note and ending of my talk, could it possibly be any good, is we like journalism. We need journalism. Be we hackers, be we farmers, we need good journalism. We have a certain amount of knowledge about security. They have a certain amount of knowledge about the world. If these two things could come together, we could get more, probably of both, but we could definitely get better quality journalism, more journalism, and a better future. So, go out and befriend journalists. Go. Oh.
Thank you, Mark. or don't go out and stay for Hacker Jeopardy.
Oh,
you know the procedure, I think. There are microphones in the audience. If there are questions, ask them, maybe.
Who could have questions?
This curve we mentioned was very private. Some of you may be up there at or near the insight. Those are the ones that ask questions. And please wake up the others that are down there.
Awesome. I don't like questions.
One question.
Oh,
question.
Mark. What? Mark, question. You don't need to see me. I'll just talk. The question.
Hi, Matt.
You grouped.
Is this still on? Good.
You gave your three groups of people you wanted to focus on: freelancers, bloggers. Too much?
Shh. I know. People are leaving the room, and people are coming into the room. But we can still be quiet so that we can get some questions and answers going. Thank you.
Thanks. But
in your group of categories of journalists, you didn't talk about the ones that you maybe excluded at the beginning, which were the ones who are working for news sources now. Do they? I can't imagine they get that sort of support or protection. At least the data security side. Maybe they get a lot of other support.
The institutional people, the people that work for big newspapers,
yeah.
Still.
Yeah. Just curious.
Yeah, I mean, they risk their lives. I'm not taking that away, but they have a lot of... I've wired myself badly, apparently. They have a lot of resources in countries where they have a long-established presence. So they have their bureau, and hopefully that bureau... Well, her bureau should have local contacts. And so when you're in a pinch, you probably have someone you can call. My friend Anna has a friend who's a student who's in... You know, it's less connected. And part of that is because of the organization. I'm not saying... that if you're Mike Wallace, as he retired, you wouldn't, you know, be in trouble in certain situations, but you have much more support, and yeah, you have much more support. There was something else. No, let's just leave it at that. I can't hear you. Was there something else?
Yeah, I've got a question.
Hey.
Okay. It's all good and fine that you suggest that we go tell journalists
it's
how
not really
to
that good. Yeah.
Protect themselves. But how do we get them to listen? I find often the problem is that they say, oh, yeah, that might be important, but I don't really understand it, and I'd rather write about this girl from the hotel.
Yeah. I would go for two solutions real quick. Maybe there's a third if I take more time. One is... In these sort of schools where people study journalism, and I went through this, one of the problems is they don't really go over this. There's no chapter on this because they're being taught by journalists who also have a bad knowledge of this area. So we need good teachers, old advice, in the university level who are teaching journalism. And part of being a good journalism teacher should now be also to know, to have an entry-level knowledge, if not better, of, what do we want to call it, cybersecurity. And I don't think we have that. I never experienced it, and I went to two journalism schools, more or less. The other thing is, and I think it's happening here, I see more and more journalists showing up on their own to the Congress and to the camp. And they're showing up. We no longer discriminate. We used to discriminate over who is press, you know. No, they just come in, and they're among us. And I think that could help, but there's no guarantees. I myself like trying to be an in-between, but I'm just one person. So I would say education, and also events like this that become more inclusive, or at least welcoming to journalists. And I think it is. So this may be part of the solution. That's about what comes to mind. I'm probably out of time, and you guys love Jeopardy, so.
Thank you, Mark.